Good evening, I'm Blaine Friedlander. Welcome to Sidelines. Today we have a guest, Steve Donahue, coach of the men's basketball team here at Cornell University. And first of all, coach, welcome.
Hey, Blaine, thank you.
Last weekend, the Big Red beat Yale 90-71. We had a victory, Brown beat Brown 74-60. And last week in the ESPN poll, we were ranked number 25. This week is a better story. Talk about our rankings and how we've gone up.
Yeah, well, you know, I haven't paid too much attention to it, to be quite honest with you. But in the same sense, it's a privilege that people nationally think that highly of your program. Now we're ranked 22nd. I think it's a credit to our guys. The extreme hard work and dedication in this type of academic environment is a credit to what their dedication to the sport and obviously to the university. So, and I'm happy for our fans and alumni and administration to feel proud about your basketball program and know that the administration had a lot to do with this, standing by us, helping us, supporting us, and building as we built this program. And to get this kind of recognition is nice for them.
And as student players for you, they have to maintain high grade point averages and you have high standards for your team.
Well, there's no doubt. First of all, just to get in here into a place like Cornell is a heck of an achievement. I tell the guys that they've accomplished a lot already by getting to this point in their life. They obviously had terrific mentors leading up to this period, obviously put a great amount of work into their academics, and to throw in that their ability to perform on the basketball court. With that, we still expect the same thing here. We have a 3.2 GPA as our team. We have two kids that got straight 4.0s this semester, and we're going to continue to demand that kind of accountability in the classroom as well.
Wow. Well, there's also more good news after your victories over the past weekend. We have Jeff Foote named Ivy Player of the Week yesterday.
Well,
talk about that.
Well, Jeff is just been a tremendous addition to our program. He's a local kid from Spencer Van Etten High School, who, when he was in high school, no one really thought he could play any level of college basketball, including myself. I didn't see necessarily the tools, the ability, the size even. He was about 6'9", 170, and went on an academic scholarship to Bonaventure and transferred here for a lot of reasons. One, a great education, but two, a chance to come and play Division I basketball. And what he's done is just taken full advantage of that opportunity in every aspect, and now he's built himself up to an NBA prospect, which is from a kid who couldn't play Division III basketball to a kid that NBA scouts really are intrigued by.
That's very interesting that the NBA scouts would be interested. You have other players like that too as well. I would assume that.
Well, Ryan Whitman has been invited to Portsmouth Invitational, which is the number one pre-draft camp for seniors in college. So he's been invited to that, and I'm hoping that Jeff will be too. But Ryan's already done that, and he obviously has accomplished a great amount in his career. And he's been, from day one, a starter and probably our best basketball player, if not the best basketball player in the Ivy League, in my opinion, over the last 3 years. And to go along with Lewis Dale, who was the player of the year as a sophomore, obviously we have great pieces to the puzzle besides those three even.
Well, Steve, after this weekend, Cornell does have 20 wins. We've got a lot of season to go, a lot of games in front of Cornell. But back in the day, there were less than 200 people in the stands. It was a very sparse crowd at basketball games. Can you tell us about the long road back to where we are today?
Sure. Well, it's 10 years building. The thing I would say to you is that even though we were not very good on the scoreboard, I think what you saw on the program, I would hope, are kids that maintained a great academic standing, a tremendous community involvement, campus involvement. Unfortunately, we just weren't talented enough at that point to win championships. What that enabled us to do with the type of person we were recruiting is enable us to recruit the same type of kid who was probably a little more talented. And as we built this up, we just were able, with I think those great kids that we initially started and through year 4 and 5 and 6, as we got better and came in second place in the Ivies and started winning more games, they enabled us to recruit talented kids who were excited about being here because of the type of kid we had in the program. The other thing I'll say to you is that there's a lot of coaches that don't make it through year four in this business who haven't had a winning season. And I didn't have a winning season after four seasons. I had great support from administration. And without that, this would have never been possible because there's a lot of impatience in our sport, in particular men's basketball, that I'm very fortunate to be in that situation that I was able to build it the right way, although it took probably longer than most people would anticipate.
How did the administration talk to you and deal with that?
Well, the thing I was judged on was the things I talked to you about. Our academics, the way the kids maintain themselves, their community involvement, the way they play, the way they, you know, they represent the university. Each year, I would say I was given an extension on my contract four or five times over those years. I never felt for one second that Andy Noel in particular was never not in my corner. And it was, as a coach, that's all you need. You need that. If you have that, you feel very comfortable about what you're doing and how to do it. And I was very confident that it would get done. But I knew it with a... unfortunately, the lack of tradition here and the ability of the other programs in our league to win over the period of time, that it's going to take time till we get it. But I was confident that we would get it done.
Well, with a winning season year after year, at least the last 2 years, the Big Red have been in the NCAA tournament. It must be easier to recruit.
Well, I think you got to be careful in the sense that, yeah, it's easier to get involved with talented kids that are excited about a team that goes to the NCAA tournament, and now we're ranked. So your pool of kids that are excited about you is greater. The thing I would tell you, we're not going to go away from our formula, which is the kid that's the right fit for Cornell and the right fit for our program, even though he may be more talented and he's a fit somewhere else, but he may not be a fit here. We're just going to continue to recruit the type of kid that's made us successful over the last 4 years.
Do you look at attitude?
Absolutely.
Attitude?
Well, there's a lot of things that obviously kids are eliminated. We call them suspects before the prospects. You know, there's a lot of suspects out there. And that's not a bad thing. It's just you don't want a kid to come in here and fail. That's the other thing. The process is about finding the young man in the right spot. We don't want kids to fail, so we're going to look for the kids that obviously get through the qualifications academically, financially, basketball-wise. And then you're going to look at the things that have made us successful, and that's, you know, dedication, selflessness, character. Kids who don't care how it gets done, yet they're talented enough to help us win.
That's great. I'm going to switch gears here for a little bit. And Cornell is playing a game in Philadelphia this weekend, and that's your old stomping ground. And I understand you have a distinct whistle. In fact, you do have a distinct whistle. And early on when you came to Cornell, you whistled at your players during a game. And when you, well, I'm going to let you tell the story.
Well, I got the job here in September, which is kind of late for college basketball. So, you know, 4 months later, we're at the Palestra playing my former team, which I was an assistant for 10 years at the University of Pennsylvania. So those guys on that court, you know, knew my whistle well. And unfortunately, I wish I didn't do it as much. I whistle a lot, and I got the attention of all 10 players, and a couple times the Penn players would ask me to stop doing it because they're kind of leaning back and looking and wondering where the heck I was doing. But I don't have that problem anymore. Those guys, the five out on the court that should know the whistle.
Well, I want to turn to a serious subject, and that would be Kalik Gant, and it's been a few years since his injury. And I want to know, how has that injury impacted him, impacted you, impacted this team?
Well, that's a show in itself, Blaine, to be honest with you. But the short story is that he suffered traumatic, but it could have been even worse than it was, where the young man was paralyzed for about 4 months, really utilizing a straw to tell you what he wants through air and blinking his eyes. What it did for me personally was probably change the way I viewed how I go about coaching on the court. Probably with trying to build the program, maybe too demanding in a negative way and expecting kids to do certain things without really worrying about how my approach was. I think what Kalik did for me is just enable that, you know, you got to look at the big picture all the time. I really, when he went down, I thought about my kids. That was the first thing I thought about, and how I would have reacted if this was my son, and how your life, not for him just changes, but your family changes. And it just put things in perspective, and I think it was a great lesson for our players at the time to realize that, you know, how important things are and don't take things for granted, and how fortunate we are to be able to play college basketball and go to a great institution. And since that point, I think our program has taken off, and Kalik has taken off. In some ways, Kalik's even said this, it was a blessing. It woke him up to figure out what is important in his life, and he's doing great. Basketball was just a piece of his life, and I think he knew it eventually, but now he really knew it, that he had so much more that he wanted to achieve, and enabled him to really keep a clear head and go out and do those things and do the things he wants to do in life.
Well, with Kalik and the other players, they have an impressive resume over the years, over the last several years, in fact. You've had an Ivy League Player of the Year, an ESPN Academic All-American, an Ivy League Rookie of the Year, and an AP All-American. As a coach, that's quite impressive.
Well, yeah, and I'll brag about that a little bit because of the kids. We have two Academic All-Americans, the first-teamer in Graham Dowell and the third-teamer in Lenny Collins, which has never happened in our program's history. One went to Harvard Law, the other, and graduated. The other one, Stanford Medical, and still there. And we have a kid at Cornell Medical and Georgetown Medical just over the last couple of years. And all those things are, you know, and I don't take it for granted. I know how fortunate I am to be able to coach great basketball players, great people, yet really are terrific academics. And they lend so much, not just to the university with basketball, but as a member of the community and a member of the university that we all should be proud of. And it's very rare, and as a coach, that you get this opportunity. And I don't take it for granted for one second.
Well, speaking of academics and being All-American, you've actually taken your team across the borders, in fact, across oceans. Your teams have gone to Australia and France. Now, as a coach teacher, what have your teams taken away from that?
Well, I think a lot of coaches use that as a basketball experience, which I think is unfortunate. That's probably the 12th or 15th on the list of why I think it's a great idea to take kids abroad. I think it's a great opportunity, a place like Australia that I'll never get to, and I think most probably will not take the opportunity to take a trip like this, that you can go visit and really explore the whole side of the world that you may never see. And just a whole day in the Great Barrier Reef and the experiences there, and obviously with Sydney, Australia, and all the great things that go on there, the Olympic Village. It will be something that they'll never forget. In particular, they'll never forget this experience that they did with their friends and on the basketball team. It helped us greatly. I think the France team has been, the France trip, which was 3 years ago, you're seeing results on the court now with a group of guys who are really bonded during that trip. Obviously saw a great part of the world that they may never see. And it was a great experience in all aspects. And I'm hoping that you continue to do that type of thing when they come part of our program, that there's not just basketball. It's obviously a whole other parts of things that you can help these kids in life.
When you went on the Paris, or the French trip, what kind of things were happening in France that you were noticing as a coach that the bonding?
Well, it was this senior class that were all freshmen. So we had a couple of kids that were homesick that I was very concerned, even though we were successful that year, just, you know, where their heads are. And these kids were probably a little more dedicated to basketball than our previous guys. So I think the trip came at a point where I needed these guys to really bond together. We kind of changed our style. We started playing faster. So I was able to get a couple weeks of practice and let them have fun playing basketball. And guys have said that was the turning point in their minds of really bonding together over that period, mostly those eight seniors in particular.
Wow. Well, finally, Steve, the New Orleans Saints won the Super Bowl on Sunday. Can you talk about the lessons that a coach has to impart on his players from the New Orleans Saints victory?
Well, I try to get lessons from every sport situation, but every every situation I can find out and help these guys. But the Saints are an interesting story for a lot of reasons. But I think the thing I draw most out is, you know, the quarterback, Drew Brees, comes, was really rejected from his previous franchise. They decided to take a kid in the draft that they thought was better than him. So he comes to a franchise where some quarterbacks, some people rejected them in the past. And he says, like, this is a great way to start, build it up, and let's all figure this out, and over years we'll build this ourselves. And I think his attitude permeated the whole team. Not only is he a great player, but you can sense that he's well-liked and respected because of his work ethic and his talent and his character. And I think it's a great story. And he's the best player in the league besides that. And I think all those things are things that your guys can look at. And I think as a coach, I look for people like that. They're going to be, you have certain controls as a coach, but in reality, your players are going to decide if you're a champion or not. And I think that's what we've seen here, but that's what obviously the Saints got.
Well, Steve, I think we're out of time. And I want to thank men's basketball coach Steve Donahue for joining us on Sidelines today. The Big Red men's basketball team plays two games this weekend on Friday, February 12th. Cornell will visit the University of Pennsylvania, where they play at the Palestra. Game time is 7 p.m. On Saturday, February 13th, Cornell visits Princeton. Game time is 6 p.m. at the Jadwin Gymnasium. Be sure to listen to Barry Leonard and Matt Grassi call the games on WVBR Radio. That would be 93.5 FM. On behalf of Steve Donahue, I'm Blaine Friedlander. Thank you for watching. Let's go Red.